We'd like to finance committee. We have a forum present, and by way of an announcement, we had posted today, just in case anybody's here, the health care reform bill. But when we posted it, we said pending vote. And I announced last night that the notes were not going to be available today, and then we would be moving it until Monday, but in case anybody missed that, but no, it happens to be here, that will come up at 10 o'clock on Monday morning. By way of announcement, and then the other thing I would like to do, Representative Taylor, I understand we've been carefully studying the minutes, and I would like to move their approval.
I would.
Okay, the motion before us.
What time?
Before we vote on that, I have to compliment the staff, Lou, and Joanna. These are the minutes from last night.
That's
amazing. Wow. That's all
now. And they stayed until what time? What time did they stay? Midnight. So I was surprised, quite honestly, this morning that the minutes would be ready, but they are, and we have a motion for approval. Any discussion? Hearing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. And thank you again. The first bill up this morning is House File 3126 by Representative Roots, and I suppose she has a meeting to get to. So, we always ask questions, but I think that's a signal that you'd like to have it in. I suppose it's not real controversial.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair members. I really do appreciate it. A couple places.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 3126 be recommended to pass, then it'll be placed on the consent calendar, or?
It's actually going to taxes, Mr.
Go to
Chair.
Taxes. Okay.
It's got to be reading first.
Read the first in the tax committee.
Yeah, but we actually, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here because we need a division report. What division next come on up?
Transportation. Representative Leader, do you want to move the
I move the Transportation Finance Division report for House File 3136. Our 26th First Committee in Grossman.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Shepard, now we can take your motion. We have the division report before us.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 3126 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay, that motion is before us, so if you could explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. This is what it actually condemns the current three intercity bus license classifications that we have, and it condenses them into one. This is the Driver's Vehicle Services Agency bill, and they just asked that this would really help them and make things more concise. Basically, currently what we have, the intercity bus license plates are according to, the classifications are according to population. It's over 200,000. Or between 70,000 and 200,000, or less than 70,000, and it applies only to private companies. Currently, there's only one private, and that is in Rochester, and that would have to be changed. The classification it's in would have to be moved to the next population classification. What they would like to do is just have them all into one classification, and that would allow up two other spots for them then if they wanted to add to that later. And that's basically it, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
There's no tax increase or change to anything else.
Any questions? Okay, Representative Seifert renews his motion then that House File 3126 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Representative Mullery, is he present yet? Okay. Representative Mahoney, you would be next on the agenda. We'll just lay over Representative Mullery's bill until he gets here then. Okay. And your bill is currently being distributed, so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair, committee members, I move House File 1252 The first committee engrossment, he recommended to pass.
Yeah, we, the same issue that we had before, we need a division report. Is anybody here that's on the public safety division?
Mary Murphy.
Representative Murphy. We could move the public safety finance division report for House File 1262.
Mr. Chairman, I move the public safety finance division report for House File 1262, first committee engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Oh, set, is it needs to read the second committee engrossment? Okay. Okay, it's the Representative Murphy Incorporated. It has to be second committee engrossment. So that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Mahoney, now you can move
the bill. I will move that House File 1262 second in committee engrossments be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, and if you could explain the bill.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this bill started out as a requirement of presumption of joint physical custody. We decided that it would be better to finally get all parties to sit down and actually talk to each other rather than throw bombs at each other, rhetorically. And hopefully this bill will require the court administrator, who said that they can absorb the cost, to bring together the parent advocacy groups, citizens, associated, who are not associated with the parent advocacy groups, the policymakers, judges, the administrators, the attorneys, and the domestic violence advocates, and some legislators, and I would trust the chairs to appoint the legislators that might have enough fortitude to force a compromise. I do not believe that unless we actually force these people to the table to actually talk to each other, that we can find a way that we don't just swing the pendulum of anger in this particular issue. We need to find a solution. So with that, Mr. Chair, this will hopefully get this done by next January 15th and bring the recommendations back so that we can actually try to move forward on this issue.
Any discussion on the bill? Well, seeing none, then Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 1262, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and, second committee engrossment be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you, members of the committee.
Representative Burns, present. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Murphy, this was one that came out of the Public Safety Division as well.
Mr. Chair, I move the Public Safety Finance Division report for House File 3498.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Murphy, would you care to move the bill?
I move House File 3498 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and if you could explain the bill, Representative Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. This bill comes from the Department of Public Safety, and here today is the State Fire Marshal, Jerry Rosenthal, if you have any questions of him as well. I think it's a simple and straightforward. We have currently a Firefighter Training and Education Board. It's made up of appointments by the governor, and those members serve without compensation currently. And the compensation that we're talking about allowing is a per diem, which is $55 per day, and it's also compensation for expenses, most notably mileage. Many members on this committee serve and are reimbursed by their employer. Most of them are firefighters, of course. And when they're reimbursed for mileage by their city, They can't get mileage from the state. When they are paid their salary to show up at a meeting, they cannot get per diem. That's set forth in statute very clearly. What we are concerned about, though, is there are some members, especially from greater Minnesota, who for whatever reason, don't get reimbursed by their city or by the League of Minnesota Cities and have to eat their own costs, especially for mileage. I think that's unfair, and it makes it very difficult, as you can imagine, sometimes to get people to serve, especially from greater Minnesota. The cost is born out of the fire safety account, not out of the general fund, and that's basically the bill. I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions. Anyone?
Yeah, are there any questions of the author?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Burns,
I had to hesitate. I was late last night.
Representative Garofalo. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Burns, on Subdivision 2, it references a Subdivision 3 that now the terms compensation and filling of vacancies are subject to. What's Subdivision 3?
Representative Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can read it to you, Representative Garofalo, if you'd like. This, as you might know, I served on Governor Plenty's staff and did board appointments for 4 years. This is a part of the statute I know very, very well. And I'd be happy to read it to you if you'd like. It basically says, members of the board may be compensated at the rate of $55 a day spent on board activities when authorized by the board, meaning the board chair, I assume, would have to sign off on that, plus expenses in the same manner and amount as authorized by the commissioner's plans. Adopted under Section 43A.18 sub 2, members who, as a result of the time spent attending board meetings, incur child care expenses that would otherwise not have been incurred, may be reimbursed for those expenses upon board authorization. That's sub A. Sub B goes on to talk about how members who are state employees or employees of political subdivisions must not receive daily payment for activities that occur during working hours, for which they are compensated already. And sub C says each board must adopt internal standards prescribing what constitutes a day spent on board activities. That's so the per diem isn't abused. And these, this section 15.0575 is used for almost every one of the licensing boards. It's kind of a standard provision. A licensing board or a training board like this, whether it be doctors, dentists, accountants, firefighters, all generally operate in the same manner. So I hope I answered your question, Representative Garofalo.
Representative Garofalo. Mr. Chairman and Representative Burns, the so when this bill, I guess the original intent of it, why wasn't it designed this way?
Representative Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, I'm not sure. I wasn't around. I'll venture a guess, and maybe the state fire marshal can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that when this board actually went away for a couple years, and didn't exist, and then it was brought back by the legislature. And at the time, I believe it was a compromise because the funding for per diem would have come out of the general fund. We've now since passed the fire safety account and to provide a source of funding for this board. And I believe that's one of the, I think, three prime purposes of the fire safety account is to fund this board, fund the state fire marshal's office, and I don't remember the other reason right now. So I think this is the appropriate place to fund the board and make sure we get good people to serve.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm grateful.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burns, you know, one of the things that sometimes we do in this committee is we like the legislature to kind of keep an eye on this stuff. Would you be open to us putting a sunset clause on this, on your act there, so we can, you know, take a look at this in the future?
Well,
this is your first time before this committee.
Tell him no.
Representative Burns.
Yes, it is. Thank
it's
you.
It's partially an initiation process, Representative Garofalo.
Well, they're all great questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I would not be in favor of a sunset. As you might know, also, I'm very proudly a volunteer firefighter, and I have to stick up for those guys. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Burns, I mean, the sunset clause is not in opposition to the bill. It just says that the legislature should stay involved and keep an eye on this. Why would you be against further legislative review of your legislation?
Representative Burns.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I'm always in favor of legislative oversight. However, this board actually did go away, and I think there was a lot of concern amongst the fire service. Sometimes legislatures aren't always as quick to act as they should. And I'd hate to see this board go away again. I know there was a little bit of concern among the fire chief and some other folks in the fire service. So I'm sure, Representative Garofalo, that if we need to in the future, we could look at this bill again, and if you think it's appropriate to repeal it, that's certainly your prerogative, and I'm sure we'll have a good discussion on that.
Mr. Chairman, sounds like a person who used to work in the executive branch there. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Burns, is it true that you're a freshman legislator?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peston, yes, it is.
No further questions.
Representative Burns, do you want to come back to the Finance Committee again? Oh, Representative Mahoney.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my first question, we'll see if I have a second question, is, Mr. Chair and Representative Burns, is there a public member on this board?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, yes, there is.
Mr. Chair, how many public members? Is there two, as someone was very adamant about, or is it just one?
Representative Burns.
There's only one.
It might be, Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, there might be reason for at least a couple of amendments before it hits the floor, or when it does hit the floor. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion? And Representative Burns, if there are no further questions, so all those in favor of the motion that the bill be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee, but have you been for that committee?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, good. Sounds like you're well prepped. So, and re-referred to Ways and Means then. So any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Anybody want to ask for a division while we're here?
I'm not with those candidates. Yeah.
Representative Walker, I'm told, is here, so we'll go to House File 3376. Representative Murphy, that would be a motion by you.
I move that Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division report for House File 3379, First Committee Engrossment.
The motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, I have a correction. House File 3376.
3376. We had a typo there. Okay. We'll incorporate 3376 in the motion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The bill is before us. Representative Walker, do you care to move the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 3376 for committee engrossment to be recommended for pass and placed on the general register, please.
Okay, and the motion is before us, and if you would explain the bill, Representative Walker.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have department do it.
Good morning, I'm Ann Sessom from the Department of Human Services. And I'll explain Articles 1 and 2. Articles 3, 4, and 5 are technical changes. So if you have questions, I'll answer them. In Article 1,
just to interrupt very quickly, there is an amendment here. Are you explaining the bill as if the amendment were on the bill?
No, Mr. Chair.
You're going to move it later?
Yes.
Okay. If you could proceed.
Thank you. Article 1 has two policy changes related to the Minnesota Family Investment Program. The first change requires participants who are in the Family Stabilization Services program to develop an employment plan, a plan related to their work requirements for MFIP. This wasn't clear in the statute last year when the Family Stabilization Services was passed. The second change relates to the MFIP performance funds. And we have made some changes to line up the language with the Federal Deficit Reduction Act and the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families language. And in order for us to calculate the rate for counties consistent with how the federal government calculates it for the state of Minnesota, we are moving to using 12 monthly calculations rather than 4 quarterly measures. And the counties have agreed that this is acceptable, simply a way of lining it up so that we can compare ourselves to the federal government more easily. Article 2 contains several policy changes. The first makes a couple small changes to the basic sliding fee child care allocation formula. These were developed as a result of working with the counties and an effort to get the money more to where it could most be used. The second change clarifies that eligibility of families, licensed family child care providers, also cannot be paid to care for their own children. It was a loophole that we discovered in the law. It was clear in statute that if you held the license, you could not be paid to care for your own children. But there was at least one instance where a license holder hired other people and they were pretty much caring for their own children, and this makes that not allowable. Another section specifies that the children in the School Readiness Connections Project, which last year was passed by the legislature, a special pilot project, and it was called School Readiness Service Agreement. It's a small pilot, and it clarifies that the children in this pilot are exempt from absent day limits in the child care program. The fourth provides that it's about sudden infant death, and this was added, I believe, in the childhood committee. Child care licensees need to place infants on their backs in order to, when they're putting them to sleep, unless the parent provides the license holder with documentation that the doctor said that that was not the appropriate sleeping position for that child. Section 5 creates a child care advisory task force that will work with the Department of Human Services over the next few years to work on various changes in the child care program to improve it. And as I said, Articles 3, 4, and 5 are technical changes.
Any further discussion on the bill? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Walker, this advisory task force, is this going to cost, is that going to cost, is the bill going to cost anybody money as far as the department or other involved?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I'm going to ask that question along from my understanding it doesn't, but...
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the language was worked out with the Department of Human Services, and the dates were such that we were going to do much of this work anyway, and we are not attaching a fiscal note to it. Originally, there was some discussion. I don't remember if you heard an earlier amendment in another committee, and the dates were earlier, and there were certain prescriptive things that would have required a fiscal note, but because of the dates that are in here, and this pretty much lines up with a lot of work that we were doing anyway, there is no fiscal note.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Walker, how much more money will be available to your bill here to districts across the state or through the...
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I didn't hear the first part of the question.
How much money will be available, extra money will be available because of the changes in the law?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative, are you referring to the changes to the basic sliding fee allocation?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't bring that information today. I don't know that it's additional information. It isn't additional money that's available. It's putting the money in the places where there is the most need. this gets complicated fast, but there are various priorities in the basic sliding speed program. For instance, people coming off transition year, MSIP, people with in high school, people with children under certain ages. There are various priorities, and then there's a general pool. And the way the formula, without making the changes to the allocation formula, the money can be allocated to counties based on having one family in a category, and more money than they need can go to them because they have one family in a category. And this is trying to recognize that if there is only one family, we're not going to give that county more money than they would need to meet the needs of that family, and we would give it instead to another county that had more families in that category. So it's redistributing it in a way that just tries to assure that it's spent on families.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, there is no new dollars in this bill. There's a zero personnel note. It's just because of the transfers of money between that and the TANF, the MOE. It looks like we're spending money, but it's just transferring and giving more flexibility.
And I just, Representative Anderson, on that point, just double checked with staff. You should have the fiscal note in your packet. Okay, and it's dealt it's the Senate companion number there. That might be what's confusing it a little bit. The fiscal note was relative to that, but the bills are in the same shape as I understand it. Is that correct, Representative Walker, or at least?
Mr. Chair, the Senate version was in the same shape. They have divided the TANF portions out of their the DHS technical bill and put it in the Senate Health and Human Service omnibus bill, but the language is still the same.
What I was meaning was relative to when the fiscal note was done, your bill is the same way that it was when the fiscal note was done, which is a zero impact. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Walker, you just said that the money is distributed differently, so is there somebody going to assume that it's shorted on money?
Ms. Sessions or Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. I'm going to take a shot at it, and maybe we can do a better job, or even Representative Slawick, because we're getting into her area instead of my area. We even have someone even better. That could answer that question. From my understanding, no, it's about the need. And so...
And he has the correct last name to come before the committee here. Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. Right now, the formula for distribution of the child care subsidy is a very prescriptive formula that has the result of leaving some counties with not enough money to serve their clientele and other counties with surplus funds that remain unspent. The primary purpose of the changes that you see in Section 1 of Article 2 in the new paragraph or clause F is basically to take that money that remains unspent in some counties now and reallocate it among the other counties, so we're not left with that situation where there are families left unserved in certain counties and other counties have monies that remain unspent at the end of the fiscal year. It will have no effect on the bottom line, but has noted in the fiscal note, but it will more effectively allocate these monies.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
Representative Heidecker.
Thank you. Mr. Carlson, I'm hoping we're not going where we went a couple of years ago with the Head Start, where we changed the slot allotment. I know that there are waiting lists in a certain number of counties, but there are more on a waiting list, for example, with Ramsey County than, say, in Polk County. And there were some changes made there, but our argument then, and Representative Greiling was very supportive of the argument we had then. Our argument was a poor kid, no matter where you're at. I can go along with what you're saying, provided that you're not, you know, affecting anybody that's on a waiting list.
Carol. Mr. Chairman, Representative, you know, basically statewide, the child care program is unfunded. They're waiting lists in most of the counties in the state. You have established in the other sections of, you know, the law, actually this section of priority, that those served first are an MFIP, those served second are those who are in the transition off of MFIP, and then there's the final group who are not either in MFIP or have not recently been in MFIP. That priority has not changed under this allocation change. It's just more effectively allocating the money among the counties. So again, you don't have the situation where there's a big deficit in one county and you have another county with a surplus in any one year. The money is still short statewide. This isn't going to change that unless you appropriate more dollars, which you're not doing, but it more effectively allocates the money.
Thank you. This is an area where I'm not usually involved in, but I have some confusion. I know that out in my area that they cannot find enough child care providers. There's a major shortage out there in rural Minnesota. Now, are they going to be affected by this, by not being able to find enough providers? Are they going to lose some of the money because it's not spent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I bluntly have to say indirectly, you know, if there's an issue as to whether or not the families have enough dollars to purchase child care services by more effectively allocating it, then the providers of child care services may perhaps would be incented to go forward with providing those services, entering the industry, because the families that they serve will now have the money to purchase these services, but it's only an indirect effect. It's not going to directly deal with that issue.
Representative Heidegger.
Thank you. Mr. Carlson, if you could give those numbers to me sometime of how that's going to affect various counties, I'd appreciate it. We could go on, but I just soon do it. Not the committee.
Mr. Carlson. He asked if you could get the numbers.
Mr. Chairman, I will try and get work with the department in getting those numbers for the
record. Representative Pollack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to answer some of the questions, we did have, we heard obviously Representative Walker's bill. We've met with the department on this. And we had some of the same questions that you've had on this. We really do see this as a good policy change, a good, you know, it's really going to be more effective, get to serve more kids, and it's really more efficient. So it's one of those rare opportunities, I should say rare, but where government is actually doing the right thing and getting better and getting the people that are served their needs in need served sooner. So we see this as a very good change. Obviously, just know we'll be monitoring it, trying to see if there are implications such as you are talking about, and making sure that this is doing what it's supposed to do.
Thank you. Any further discussion? We have an amendment before us. Then, Representative Walker, do you want to move the amendment?
Mr. Chair, if I'd like to move the A7 amendment, please.
Okay. Representative Walker moves H3376A7. And if you could explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One, the Senate has this in their DHS technical bill. The department is not opposed to it. It's a technical clarification and just making sure that counties understand that the residency requirements that we have, they should be following under this section.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, I'm just wondering why not allow counties to have the flexibility if they want to put residency requirements on whatever program it is for social services. We hear all the time from our county commissioners, we have no flexibility. When times are tight, the legislature takes their local government aid away, etc. Every year I hear from my county commissioners about the lack of flexibility they have. They there's so much money to go around, they have to provide a lot of this. Why wouldn't we, Lyon County wants to have stricter residency requirements, why not let them do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cypher, Mr. Chair, if you allow Ms. Weber to answer this. I'm carrying three department bills, and as you guys know, they become garbage bills. But this year, they have become even more attractive for any policy additions by anyone. And so if we can let Ms. Weber explain that question to Representative Seifert, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, my name is Jessica Wedstrom with Legal Services Advocacy Project, the Division of Legal Aid. What we're seeing is not that essentially what this bill does, we believe, is clarify state law that the residency requirement is 30 days. What we're finding is that we have residents of Minnesota that have been residents all of their lives, 20, 30 years, and they could go stay in a battered women's shelter in another county, be establishing residency there, and a county could put up a residency barrier saying you have to be here 3 months to get state help, even though you're a Minnesota resident. You've been a Minnesota resident for 20 years. This is not happening statewide. It's happening in a couple of counties. We feel it levels the playing field for counties in terms of having every county impose the same residency requirements for families to get assistance. And this is state assistance into the consolidated fund. These are not county dollars. It's state dollars going into the consolidated fund for counties to use.
Representative Seifert.
Well, Mr. Chair, certainly I can understand for a battered women's shelter, but you know, why don't we just make an exception for that and then let the counties decide after that what they want to do?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert. You know, I don't think we can just exclude or include the battered shelters. I have a lot of constituents that I'm losing to the south suburbs. Many of them who are working, some of them who are on public assistance in some various form, that whether it's because of schools or job opportunities, we have several that are moving to Lakeville, good Democrats too, that...
This would be for against putting the amendment.
That's another reason for Representative Seifert to vote no. But again, like the testifier just stated, you know, if we can't decide where our constituents decide to move, as much as I hate that my constituents are moving out of District 61B, for whatever reasons, people are going to decide to move from the northern Minnesota down to the city, from the city up. We have individuals that we are attracting because of their profession in different areas. And, you know, things come up, they lose their job once they get there. We really should be not having some type of different standards for certain individuals in certain counties.
Mr. Chair,
a clarification. Representative Walker had said the department, and I believe that the testifier is with Legal Aid, not with the Department of Human Services. Maybe I misunderstood. Is the department in favor of this amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, from my understanding, the department's not opposed. And you are right, this is not a department staff.
Someone from Human Services that could clarify that the Plenty Administration or department is in favor of this particular amendment would be interesting to me to find that out.
Ms. Sessions is still with us, so Ms. Sessions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, the department is neutral on this position because it wasn't in the governor's original bill, and we are not taking a position on it, and there is no cost, and so we aren't opposing it.
Any further discussion then on the amendment? Seeing none then, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now have the bill before us as amended. Representative Walker renews her motion that House File 3376, the first committee engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Walker, you have another bill up, and that one was before state government finances. Representative Kahn is here. Would you care to move the division report for House File 219?
Yes, I move the State Government Finance Division report for House File 219.
Okay, the second committee in Grossman would be part of the motion. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Walker, care to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 219 as second committee in Grossman to be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Please.
Okay, the motion is before us, if you'd like to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that we got really far last year. We heard this last year. We had it in the state government omnibus bill. We were this close to passing it. However, Dewar did have a $10 million fiscal...
Representative Walker, I don't know about others, but I'm having a little difficulty. If you could move the mic a little closer.
Hopefully
thank
that
you.
Helps you. Is it me?
Yes, it is.
It's always Steve Mahoney.
I don't know. We were hearing you just fine on the last bill, so it's... there we go.
Mr. Chair, I had something in my district this morning with Representative Hornstein and the Speaker, and I think it's just one of those mornings for me. Some things are just blinking on and blinking off, so it's no surprise. As I was stating before, Mr. Chair, that this bill got through committee, was in conference committee with the state government omnibus bill last year. However, there was a $10 million fiscal note that I disagreed with from Dewar. However, the chairs respected it, and so it did not make the final bill cut coming out of conference committee. The amendment that got put on in Representative Kahn's committee brings the fiscal note to a zero, and basically saying individuals that are already doing this do not have to comply. This is my caregiver bill that is really utilizing a pure sick time that an individual has. Under current state law right now, employers only have to allow you to use the sick time that you have occurred for yourself and your minor children. And as you know, with our aging population that we have, more and more families are having to take off time to take care of their elderly parents, their grandparents, their spouses, and in many cases now their adult children. And so this bill actually gives the flexibility for an employee to be able to utilize honestly how they are doing their sick time to be able to take care of one of their loved ones. And so I encourage the support, hope for your support, and encourage you to vote for it.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to bring this up, and I'm embarrassed to bring this up because it did come to my division. But my last conversation with our legal counsel, Mark Stafford, said that there's something wrong. And I don't know if you talked. Unfortunately, he's coming back from the 35W. He said that this form of the bill takes some rights away that people already have.
Ms. Halvack, are you familiar with what the issue is?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn and Representative Walker, I'm not familiar with that issue. The one issue that I am familiar with is that on line 2.10, the word or creates somewhat of an ambiguity when it excludes employers that have policies in place. It's not clear whether they have policies that deal with the use of sick leave for a spouse, a sibling, or any of these, if it's a comprehensive list or a selective list. And that's the one issue that I'm aware of. And if you replace the word or with the word and, it would make it a comprehensive list.
I hope you can say
Mr. Chair.
Chairman, I hope you can say I hope that's the same issue. It sounds like it could be.
Mr. Chair, I'd like
We could temporarily, would you like to hear from Mark Shepard? We've got three other bills on the agenda. We could just temporarily lay it over, and then you could check that out. We don't want to take current rights away. We'd want to make sure we're expanding opportunity. So why don't we just temporarily lay the bill over until we double check and see what
It may very well be that single word change, but we should check it out. So that bill is temporarily laid over, and that brings us down to Representative Casey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I guess I'll be
just before we get started. We're passing out the first fiscal note had apparently an error in it, or in the photocopying. So members are now receiving a new fiscal note on your bill.
Does it still say zero?
It still says zero. There's an error in the copying of the fiscal note. So just disregard the first one that was in the packet and take the or look at the one that's now coming around. Mr. Mark.
Mr. Chair, this is the fiscal note for House File 39551CE, and it says preliminary on the top. The fiscal note that you have is not completed. I had a discussion with the Executive Budget Officer in the Department of Finance this morning, and he said it will come back zero. There is some money being moved around, which is discussed on page 7 of the fiscal note, but the net impact is zero, and so zero will be the appropriate number when they complete the fiscal note.
Okay, we did get a little bit ahead of our... Is Representative Huntley here? Do you serve in Representative Huntley? Would you care to move the division report?
I'll move that the Health Care and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 3955, First Committee Endorsement.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Tasman, if you'd care to move the bill.
I move House File 3955, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. If you could explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill is really kind of gets at two things. The first section is a provision that extends the period of time between which inspections of certain home aids need to be kind of inspected. It's now, I think, 65 days, and we're moving that out to 180 days. And so it's mostly an administrative efficiency thing. These are folks that provide not healthcare services, but other services to people that are sick. And because they're not actually dealing with healthcare services, we thought that a longer period of time between inspections was appropriate, and I don't think there's opposition to that provision. And then the starting at Section 3 and for the rest of the bill, what this bill does is it starts us down the path of trying to take a different look at long-term care services by setting up and authorizing what are called community consortiums. It would authorize three of them, and it could be a group. It could be a county and a group of individuals within that county. It could be the nursing home and the long-term care providers getting together and coming up with a plan and saying, we want to take a block of money from existing grants, so there's no new money involved here, but use a variety of different streams that now are not coordinated and coordinate them within a particular community so that they can do a more comprehensive planning. And so instead of having streams of long-term care funding grants going to a variety of different places without any coordination, this would allow or start to allow for some coordination between our state money to really think about what we ought to be doing with long-term care at a local level. And that's the gist of the bill.
Excuse me, Representative Murphy, did you want to
point? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Houston, what we had in Representative Houston's bill last night, would that be one of the agencies that could be used?
Representative Houston had a bill on block nurses and, live-at-home nurses, and that would be one of the groups that would be part of this planning process, exactly.
On this point, sir, Representative Griffin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, when you go ahead with this discussion, one of the things that's always been brought up by the long-term care facilities in my district is, why is it that the veteran cannot stay in a nursing home in Belgrade or Glenwood or learn at all? Why does he have to go to Glenwood? Or why does he have to go to St. Cloud? He'd like to stay in the community where his family is, where his friends are. Has there ever been any discussion on that?
Mr. Chair, I don't know specifically about that. I think you raised a good point, and I suppose that could be part of this discussion. I don't know if you want to have any testifiers come down today.
What we do recommend, Ethan, is if somebody has a specific question, we just don't take general testimony, so that would be fine.
I think
that's a specific question.
An interesting point, yeah.
Is there somebody that can respond to that?
Okay,
sure. You aren't actually done presenting the bill yet, but...
Well, we're close.
We're close, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Patty Cullen from Care Providers Minnesota, representing the Long-Term Care Imperative, and this was the proposal we brought forth. Very good question. There's nothing precluding within this consortium them to work with local veterans organizations. I know the new Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Veterans Affairs has this as an issue that he's willing to work on. We've had conversations with him. I know there's some planning money within the Vets Administration proposal that's come forth this session. So I think this is very complimentary, and we have been in contact with you.
I usually try to give the author a chance to finish the bill before we get too many questions. So if you want to wrap it up, and then
I've wrapped it. Anything I want to say else? Yes.
Are there additional questions then of the author on House File 3955? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tyson, do consortiums, other than the, you say using the same money stream, do they need money over and above what is already available to make themselves work?
Mr. Chair, really this isn't to fund the consortiums themselves. What this is about is, we'll have a stream of money going to a certain type of, like a block nurse grant program, or to a different type, and they don't, when those grants, which are small grants, are awarded, they may be awarded in, one in Marshall and one in Rochester. And what we're trying to do here is say, if a community wants to do some planning, we should actually bring some of those streams together so that they can plan a little bit more comprehensively, so that we're not doing one piece of long-term care over in this community and another over in this community. And I think, hopefully, as a model going forward, it makes more sense for us to start using our dollars in a more coordinated way, and this is just a kind of a first step down that path to make sure we don't have those separate funding streams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tyson, where have these consortiums been, or where did you get the model from?
This is a new thing. So, but maybe the folks that are behind the bill can explain that a little more.
Mr. Chair. Okay, identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Terry Thurlow with the Minnesota Health and Housing Alliance, also representing the Long-Term Care Imperative. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, to your question, this is really a model that has grown out of discussions as we have care providers and MHHA have brought and consulted our own membership about ways that we can break down silos and sort of existing dollars. This actually allows flexibility for new consortiums to be developed. We frankly have created flexibility so they could be potentially new consortiums that have not yet developed. They may be existing consortiums. And so I think it offers new opportunities as well.
Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just a word since Representative Murphy referenced the living at home block nurse, and so I'd be referring specifically to that community-based care for older adults. When that program began, it was audited by the University of Minnesota that they could document those cost savings by an outside group, and the cost saving was quite impressive. But one of the things that is clear about that program and that's been determined by outside people is once you put a program like that in a bureaucracy, costs go up. I mean, that the very nature of that being community-based and owned is part of what keeps the cost down. And I mention that in this discussion just because I hope we learn from current programs and what we've already studied about them that we have to be careful about creating bureaucracy around that ends up adding to the cost.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Well, seeing none,
Representative Thiessen moves that renews his motion that House File 3955, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And next one I'm quite interested in, and it's probably good that we have an attorney at the table.
We do
have to get the bill before
us. All right. I'll move the health care.
I'm responding here just to the title of it. Would leave one a little bit in wonderment. But Representative Thiessen moves
the Health Care and Human Services Finance Division report for 3134 first engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I was told it was non-controversial, but
I'll move House File 3134 first engrossment be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, motion is before us. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think what would be better is to actually have another attorney come down and explain the bill as opposed to me. So if we could do that, I think that would be helpful. I think this actually does some good things. It creates a new mechanism. For the primary purpose is to create a new mechanism to transfer property among family members, essentially. But why don't you go ahead?
And if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Julian Kuiper. I'm an attorney in St. Paul. I'm a member of the Real Property Section Legislative Committee that brought forth this legislation, and I'm representing the Bar Association in support of it. This is basically in two parts. The first part is the part I think you're interested in. That part would authorize for the first time real property to be transferred by deed that does not become effective until the owner's death. Several years ago, there were at least 9 states that had similar legislation, including Wisconsin, and there are 4 states looking at this legislation, including California. We're hoping to join that trend away from probate. Very often, one of the only assets that would have to go through probate is the home. And to avoid probate under current law, you have 2 choices. You either have to use a life estate arrangement, which has disadvantages because it basically deprives the owner of the exclusive control of the property. You now have additional owners of the property, children and their spouses, an unusual case. Or you have to go through a great deal of expense to establish a living trust and then transfer the homestead into the trust, thereby avoiding probate. What this does is allow you to execute a deed that does not become effective until the owner, the other parties joining and start in transferring the property have passed away. You wouldn't have to go through probate to make the transfer. It would be analogous to having a very large stock portfolio that you can set up to transfer on death through a COD arrangement, or a bank account where you could set it up to transfer on death through a pay on death arrangement. The way this is set up, the deed would have no transfer effect until the person designated in the deed dies. Then the title would immediately transfer subject to any encumbrances, mortgages, liens, including medical assistance claims and liens that attach to the property during the owner's lifetime. There is a mechanism in the bill to deal with medical assistance claims. This bill was amended in the policy committee to remove the Department of Human Services concerns about how they would be able to collect claims against that real estate. Yesterday, the companion bill in the Senate was also amended to remove those concerns. So, except for these 2 little words, I think the bills are the same in both the House and the Senate at this point. The second part of the bill deals with some concerns from the section. The biggest one is the doctrine of practical location. There was a recent Court of Appeals decision that held that the doctrine of practical location does not apply to torrent property. This was a big surprise to the torrent people because they saw no reason why the doctrine of practical location could not apply. The doctrine of practical location is somewhat similar to the doctrine of adverse possession. It's always been clear that you cannot acquire title by adverse possession against foreign property. The Court of Appeals took that position and confused it with the doctrine of practical location and said you can't use doctrine of practical location in a foreign proceeding. That doctrine really applies where the owners of the property are in agreement that the legal description does not conform to the boundary that the parties recognize on the ground. And by clarifying this issue that the doctrine of practical location does apply in foreign deals, it would be a simple proceeding subsequent for the parties to go in and have their boundaries adjusted even for torrent property. The other provisions in the second part of the bill are clarifying that when you have a notarized signature, an acknowledged signature by someone who's representing a corporation or a limited liability company or other entities, no further inquiry has to be made into the actual authority of the person who signed those documents. We've been doing that for many years for various entities. This language is adding limited liability company to that laundry list of signatures that don't have to have further inquiry once they've been properly acknowledged. And I think I'm leaving out one other little part that only real estate attorneys would have any interest in. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you have in the bill.
I'm not sure what you meant by the last statement. We were putting something in the law, so maybe if you could comment what you want to say on real estate.
It's removing some obsolete language dealing with filing notices of list tender.
No.
So it's removing some obsolete language. That's in
the last page, 24. Well, nothing that would be of a major policy change. Is that what you meant?
Yes. Not a, it's just removing some obsolete language. And a technical kind of correct.
Okay, we do have some questions. Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author or the testifier, as far as the limits on the property, is there any limits on the value of the property or the income of the individual?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Flowers, no.
No, so this would be applied to all people in Minnesota.
And to any interest in real estate.
And any interest.
Could be the fee interest, it could be a partial interest.
And regarding that, as a follow-up, if there was a mortgage on the property, is the mortgage transferred as is, or does it have to be paid off before it's transferred?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Flowers, the property would transfer subject to the mortgage. And you'd have to look at the acceleration clause in the mortgage to determine if it's accelerated. If it was a transfer to a spouse or certain members of the family, there would be no acceleration of the mortgage, but the mortgage would stay in place and have to be paid off.
Mr. Chair, so that before the beneficiaries could receive the property, they'd have to pay off the mortgage?
Mr. Chair, it depends on the mortgage, the terms of the mortgage.
Okay.
Yeah, so if the mortgage requires that, you'd have to do that, and if it doesn't, you wouldn't. You just have to keep paying the payment. I mean, that's essentially it.
But, Mr. Chair, Representative Flowick, title does pass at the time of death. That's the way the probate court handles it. You don't have title sitting in the dead person's name. Title transfers under the probate code at the instant of death, subject to claims and administration, and that's exactly how this would work. The title would pass to the person named in the deed, but it would be paperwork to follow and sorting out to follow to establish marketable title in the new owner.
Having gone through something like this, it's often more complicated. It can be extremely complicated on how the person receiving the property can pay it off and how long that will take and getting the refinancing and then if they qualify and all of those types of things. Has it worked all right in other states? I mean, have there been a lot of complications?
Mr. Chairman,
I wrote your name down and I've got so much paperwork here I can't find it. Could you remind me of your name again? And
Julian Zwaber, last name B-W-E-B-E-R.
Zwaber.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, I apologize for that. Did you get Representative Flowick's question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Flowick, this bill would not change that problem at all. So you'd have the same problem in probate. This just avoids the extra expense of probate.
So it avoids the expense of probate. You have the security of knowing the property will be passed on
However, the normal, if a bank requires the new owner to refinance, they will have to qualify on their own terms to pick up the mortgage, essentially. That's just the way it is, right?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman. Flavik, that is correct.
Okay. We have Rissa Westrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Similar to Representative Flavik's question, I think this is a good provision or a good bill, Representative Thiessen and Mr. Zwaber.
Yeah.
What would you call? Would this deed be called something different than a warranty deed or a quitclaim deed to identify it, or a personal representative deed? What would you call it? Is my first. Maybe I'll ask you that first, and then the second question. I think was answered with Representative Flavik's issue, and just to confirm it, it basically would leave everything in place. It's just you wouldn't have to go through the probate, but in an estate plan, you'd now probably suggest it to your clients that when you're doing your will, maybe you also want to do this deed, record it, you keep all your interests until death. Is that how I'm understanding it? Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winston, that is correct. And I'm losing the first part of your question.
Mr. Chair, the name of the deed, what would you call it?
A transfer on death deed. This
okay.
is the last big change we made in the bill. Up until the last moment, we were calling it a beneficiary deed, as they do in Arizona. But we decided it would be easier to explain to the legislature that we call it a transfer on death deed. It's analogous to a quitclaim deed.
Okay. Second question, Mr. Chair, and I missed some of the early testimony as I was trying to pull the bill up. Do you deal with any other property issues in here as far as, here's my question, and Representative Thiessen, I don't know if we can look at doing this, but Mr. Zwaber, are you familiar with, in some of my small towns especially, but I think it's probably an epidemic across the state. There's getting to be such different areas where title examiners and banks won't accept the description of the title now because they say it's vague or it's not accurate. In their estimation, it doesn't say north along the property line, so-and-so. And so I'm finding constituents periodically, but quite frequently, that are faced with a quiet title action is a common way to solve these vague description issues. And I had one attorney tell me a couple of years ago that there would be a simpler way to fix this in the legislature, just making some changes. Are you familiar with that vague title issue or vague description issue that people, especially it seems like in small towns, are facing? But it's probably an epidemic across the entire state. And is there any fix for that in here? Are you familiar with that problem?
Flavor.
Mr. Winston, the fix is probably to see an attorney in the first place instead of trying to do deeds with the homemade. The real property section has considered proposals to allow transfer of title by other than the legal description, the proper legal description.
Mm-hmm.
There are a host of problems involved with that, and it's, once you start to collect people, get them a little bit more room to be ambiguous and still get the job done, you just perpetuate more of that. So the answer, I think, is that it should be done right in the first place, or you pay later to get it fixed.
And Mr. Chair, and Mr. Zwaber, I mean, I understand that's a nice thing for attorneys, including myself, but, in a town where property values, you know, $20,000 will buy you several houses, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 will buy you most of the rest, and $100,000 will buy you the doctor's house. $2,500 to $3,000 to do a quiet title action gets to be kind of steep. And so if there's a way we could fix that for people with vague titles, because I mean, these are tracts of land and properties that have sold or been in existence for 100 years, and it just puzzles puzzles people that we can't figure out a better solution, but something we could discuss in the future.
Mr. Chair, and I think I this bill doesn't address anything about that, but I think it probably is a important question that we need to think through some more. And so I'm sure the Bar Association will be willing to talk more with you about that.
And I, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Zlater and Representative Thiessen, I'd like to work with you on maybe that issue. We could discuss it further.
That'd be great.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lindstrom, our next meeting of the Real Property Section Legislative Committee is tomorrow. I'll bring your concerns straight to the committee.
Well, it's already on the agenda then. Okay. Any further discussion on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. I'm referring to the registered land. I know that even on city councils, we've always had problems with adverse possession. It's always been an issue. Does this in any way change, say, for example, as a piece of property and that house, and I bought this piece of property and that house, all of a sudden I find out much later, is not on my property, it's on somebody else's property. And it's been like that for 60 years, 70 years. Titles have switched hands for many years. Thinking that you own that much later, somebody does it. So then finds out that that piece of property, that house, is on somebody else's property. Now, I can, through adverse possession, get that. Does this in any way change? I like the common law doctrine of practical location of boundaries. Is this changing that so I don't have to go through litigation in court?
Mr. Chair.
Mrs. Waver.
You would have to do something to establish a change in boundaries. But the doctrine of practical location depends on the parties being in agreement that
okay.
This is where the boundary should be, or where the parties have allowed it to be treated as the boundary for many years. Adverse possession has to be adverse. It has to be in your face, open, notorious adverse possession for 15 years or longer. Doctrine of practical location is where the parties get to settle it, and this is just designed to let them do it for Torrance property, as the Torrance people thought they could before.
Representative Heidegger from the Pet. Any further discussion? Hearing none then, Representative Thiessen removes his motion that House File 3134, First and Grossman, be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. Any further?
Real quick, Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, is this moving in the Senate as well?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Great.
Any further discussion? Hearing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We'll now revert back to the. We'll now revert back to the second item on the agenda, House File 3132, Representative Mullery's bill. Representative Mullery, have you been before this committee before?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, you have. Okay. I'm disappointed because we did have orientation for one other member earlier today that hadn't been here before, and I just was going to prep my orientation committee over to my right there if you hadn't been here before, but being that you have been, we'll move ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I've had the experience.
You've had the experience, okay. Representative Tamar, we need a motion for the division report.
Chair, I would move the Public Safety Finance Division Report for House File 3132, First and Grossman.
The motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Tamar, if you'd like to move the bill.
I'd move House File 3132, First and Grossman, be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
And Representative Mullery, if you'd care to explain the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe Representative Cole
he's...
Oh, there he is.
There he is, yeah.
Has an amendment, the DE2 amendment, which I have agreed to, and I think improves the bill, so if he wants...
You'd like to add the amendment before you explain the bill?
I would move it, or he can move it. I think he did the work.
I think the committee to move it. Representative Coles, you can accept...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's being passed out now. It's the DE2 amendment. It's language that I worked on with Representative Mollery. The Humane Society, I understand, is fine with it. I think it doesn't change the substance of the bill. It just is a little more clear about the intent requirement and separates out two other sections that kind of got muddled together in the original draft. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would move the DE2 amendment.
Does everybody have the Coles amendment?
No.
Okay, we'll wait a moment then, so I'll make sure everybody has the amendment to DE2. Okay, everybody now have it? Okay. Representative Coles, if you'd...
I would move the DE2 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us, and are you or Representative Mollery going to explain it then?
Mr. Chair, I think that I don't want to speak for Representative Mollery, but I believe this will put it into it doesn't change the substance of his bill at all. It really is. It's fairly technical. Lays out the elements a little more distinctly, so it doesn't change the substance. I think we can put it on, and Representative Mollery can then explain the bill.
Representative Mollery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles is correct. I will explain the bill, which is basically contained in the amendment. It's just some technical language.
It puts in the form that the author prefers. And any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mollery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, we all know from the Michael Vick case about the dangers of what's going on with fighting animals, and this just tightens up our statute in a few instances. It provides that if you have devices for causing animals to fight, training them, etc., and you're intending to use that to train animals to fight, this would be guilty of a felony. And also, if you're attending at a event, the people come there, and these events, the animal fighting goes on because of the people that go there and gamble and things like that. And so that becomes a gross misdemeanor. And Mr. Chairman, with regard to this committee's intent, it just was sent here solely to see if there was any fiscal impact. And as you note from the statement, the fiscal notes, there's no fiscal impact. And in fact, since 2000, only 8 individuals have been convicted of the felony, and all of them received probation. So there's no fiscal impact on this bill. So.
Okay. We do have another amendment that's been distributed, but any questions at this point, Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman, do you want to deal with the amendment first, or do you want questions on the bill at this point?
Why don't we deal with the amendment and then deal with questions on the bill before final passage. This is an amendment by Representative Teppan, A08-154-2X. Representative Mollery, do you have a copy of it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Teppan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a...
You'll need to move the amendment.
Oh, I will move the 542X amendment, 1542X amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Should explain the amendment.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. This is an amendment of a bill I've been working on for 4 years. And 2 years ago, this bill passed in an omnibus bill in the House and came out in conference committee. And what it does is it creates new penalties for the crime of neglecting a vulnerable adult. The problem is that under current law, there's only one penalty for neglecting a vulnerable adult, even if that penalty results in death. And that penalty is, sadly, only a gross misdemeanor, punishable by a maximum of $3,000 and 1 year in prison. And I think that is just plain wrong, and I especially think it's wrong when we talk about animals. And the current maximum penalty for mistreating a dog, a cat, or other animals is a felony penalty, punishable by a $10,000 fine and 4 years in prison. So if you compare a penalty of neglecting a vulnerable adult, which results in death. I just want you all to think about it. $1,000 penalty, 1 year, or excuse me, $3,000 penalty and 1 year in prison. If you mistreat an animal and that results in death, the maximum penalty is not 1 year, but 4 years and a fine of $10,000. So what my amendment does is it creates some new penalties, and what those penalties would do are laid out pretty well between lines 1.2 and 1.25. It would change the penalty to a fine of $20,000 and a maximum imprisonment for 10 years if the act of neglecting a vulnerable adult results in death, and it would change the penalty to a maximum of $10,000 and 5 years in prison if the act of neglecting a vulnerable adult results in great bodily harm. And this has been a very important amendment. I've long felt that this has been overlooked in statute, and I think it's just absolutely ridiculous that we would worry more about and we would have greater crimes for mistreating an animal than a human being, your mom or dad, as an example. So members, I hope you'll support me, and I would like a roll call on this amendment.
The roll call has been requested. Representative Mallory, advice to the committee.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is an absolutely outrageous amendment. It has nothing to do with the bill, and I realize there's no germaneness rules, but then if we're going to open it up to anything that's any bill can have any amendment on it, then I think we're going to destroy the whole committee structure here. I will pull the bill if this is on the bill, because it is completely improper. It has nothing to do whatsoever with the bill, which is fighting animals. We're not talking about fighting vulnerable adults or something like that either. This is an amendment that it came up on the floor last year. I was not prepared for this, obviously, this morning, because it has nothing to do whatsoever with the bill. There was a letter from the elder law section last year opposing this when it came up. She tried this on the floor. It was defeated, of course. People that don't understand what the importance is dealing with vulnerable adults or how to deal with them, it requires a lot of knowledge. I've been in the elder law section of the Bar Association for about 20 years almost, at least 15. I was on the I was one of the six attorneys from the private sector on the Attorney General's year-long study of how to treat vulnerable adults back in the late 90s, and this is not in fitting with that. It was determined that this type of action would harm actually vulnerable adults because they would not get the family to participate in taking care of them when you're threatened with being charged with serious criminal charges if you don't act quite right. And I'm not sure, I haven't had a chance to read this through, whether this exempts, at one point, the one last year, I think, exempted the people who should be liable, if anybody, and that was people who are doing it for profit. So I would very, very, very strongly suggest a no vote on this amendment.
We're having a little side discussion here, members. There may potentially be some fiscal cost, and Representative Kamar's bill last night, if I recall correctly, you were right at your target. That's correct. I understand the fiscal analyst is present.
We have an answer. Mr. Chair, I was just going to say, since I have been carrying this for 4 years, I did have a fiscal note created, and I'm looking for it, but it was a very, very, very minimal impact. Very small fiscal note. I can't remember. Here's one. It's zero. The old fiscal note for this bill.
Well, it's an old fiscal note.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'd like to hear from Ms. Cater. I mean, excuse me, Carter. After all these years, I couldn't be making that mistake.
Mr. Chair, committee members, since it is a felony, there is a possibility of a bad impact for corrections. I checked for the fiscal note on this. I could not find one for last year, but. But if this fiscal note 406 looks like there is shows that the state and the local there is no fiscal impact, and I assume this is the same as the same bill as, except for the one difference that you reported. But like I said, no fiscal note has been requested on the current.
On the current one, so. Okay, thank you. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just have some concerns about this as well, and I just to relay some information I have. I mean, the Vulnerable Adults Act, there's a task force that's going to be working on this issue over the summer. I think Representative Mulder laid out that there are, I think, a variety of policy considerations and concerns. I totally understand where this is coming from, and we don't want any of these types of acts to be going on, certainly, but I think we also need to set this in the context and have a full policy discussion around it. And I, as I understand, the task force, who have actual experts as opposed to us sitting around the table, will at least come up with some recommendations on that that can guide that discussion.
Representative Heffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to quickly comment on Representative Thiessen and Representative Mullery's question about looking more into it. I just want to point out to the committee members that I have asked for a committee hearing this year and last year, and it passed bipartisanly in 2006. So this isn't anything new, out of the blue, or anything like that. And I think this is highly relevant. It's a crime. And I think this is the proper place to do it. If I can't go through the proper channels and get a committee hearing, I just feel strongly that this is a good place to vet it out.
Did you, Representative Heffin, simply redo your bill from the past?
Yes, it's slightly different. This is this part was different because of some slightly different because of some concerns nursing home workers have had with it, and so this one is caregivers. I think it's a caregiver and individual who has responsibility for the care of a vulnerable adult. So it would be a relative or a friend. It's a little bit. I think it's a little bit tighter. It just lays out more penalties as opposed to just one.
So it's not exactly the same as it was in the past when we had that.
I think the one that did pass, I think, was the same, now that I think about it, because the nursing home workers did have a concern. So I actually believe this is what passed, now that I think about it, because the nursing home workers had concerns that day, and so I did modify it, to my recollection.
And the other question I would have is that on line 110, you reference the section is effective August 1, 2007, and then you reference on 2.1, August 1, 2007, again, it looks like we should have had a little better proofreading.
I guess I would make the amendment, and I don't know if that's a mistake that hasn't happened before, but obviously I put in the request to have it updated
on the amendment,
right?
Should have it in proper form.
Yes, I would make that amendment to change the dates to incorporate 2008 for the dates instead of 2007, and on lines 1.10 and 2.1.
Okay, the amendment is before us to correct the 2007 to 2008. Any discussion on those changes?
Can I just incorporate that change? It's a technical change.
You can incorporate it if you choose. Okay, it's incorporated. in the author of the amendments, amendment. Representative Cole.
Mr. Chairman, I just briefly to comment on the discussion about, you know, we should explore the policy behind this more. We're not really impacting policy here. Well, I mean, if you want to say that changing penalties is impacting policy, sure, but what Representative Pepin's amendment does is it only changes the penalties. The underlying policy, the underlying offense is not being changed, it's not being affected. All we're dealing with here is the penalties for violating that already existing offense. We've already had that. The legislature has already had that policy discussion, and you know, there may be a reason to change that, but I don't believe that Representative Pepin's proposal is really a policy proposal. I think she's, to the extent it is policy, it's all about the penalty, and she's explained that I think fairly compellingly. So I urge members to support of the amendment and hope that it'll go on. I understand some of Representative Mallory's concerns, but you know, if bills can't move through on their own, members on both sides of the aisle, when both parties have been in charge, have always looked for places to park their ideas. So I urge members' support.
Representative Heidegger.
Thank you. I'm looking at the amendment, and I'm looking at having worked at a nursing home and working with the elderly. I have some real major problems with this amendment. Where it's going, I think it needs to have a full hearing, and I think we need to have the home care providers discussing that. I mean, you get into certain issues there. I don't know. I'm there's some gray areas here that I have a very difficult time with.
I need to press that.
Okay, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Heidgerken, it doesn't change anything with people who work at nursing homes. That section is not changed. That was the concern a couple of years ago, and it's my belief now that they are neutral on this because it does not change the penalty for nursing home workers.
Representative Pfeiffer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just looking at this from a common sense perspective of a lot of people in the room already voted for this already on a bipartisan basis, and we went through the channels, tried to get a hearing, didn't get one, and you look at the results. I mean, you have a box of vitamins on the shelf to beef up Fido, and it's a felony. You leave your elderly grandmother in the basement to starve, and it's a gross misdemeanor. That makes absolutely no sense to the average person out in the public. So I just think let's put the amendment on and let's move it through and let's vote for it unanimously at that point.
Rep. Samari, any concluding comments?
Well,
we're about to vote.
Mr. Chairman, I think it came out in the testimony how bizarre and ridiculous this is. If you're getting paid as a worker in a nursing home to take care of somebody, nothing can happen to you under this. If you're working unpaid because of concern about your parents, about your son, whatever, you can end up with an extremely serious felony. It's just, to me, bizarre, and most people here did vote against it last time because it came up on the floor and it went down big, and I don't know what's going on that this kind of thing would even be considered in this committee.
Okay, we'll take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
Yeah.
Earhart?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kinstead? Rofflo?
Yeah.
Greiling? Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman? Heidgerken?
Yes.
Schulte?
No.
House? Huntley? Yarrow?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn? Cole?
Aye.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otremba?
Yes.
Yeah. Seymour?
No.
Pelosi?
No.
Pepin?
Yep.
Poppy?
No.
Rigvino? Seifert?
Yes.
Sirdis?
No.
C. Severson?
Yes.
Simon? Slawick?
No.
Solberg? Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius? Walker?
No.
Westrom?
Yes.
Riffengren.
Reiling?
No.
Okay, being 17 no's and 8 ayes and 4 abstentions, the motion is defeated. We have the PAMAR motion now before us. That's House File 3132, the first engrossment, the record under the FAS, as amended in place on the General Register. Any further discussion? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I have some questions for the author. I've noticed that part of the bill does in 1.8, it deletes the word domestic, so we're just talking about animals. I want to know, does this also cover the things that we recently passed about the Boston Commission?
Representative Muller.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kahn. And rather than asking you to repeat that, I'll just say no.
And I think you're going to have to speak a little louder. Okay. Some of us are having trouble hearing you.
Well, the issue is that when you omit domestic and we see the word animal, you know, you got to remember, Mr. Chairman, that before I was a legislator, I was a biologist. And so animal does, as I read this language, animal does include human, and so I want to know how it excludes the Boxing Commission and the activities regulated by the Boxing Commission.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I think we would use the history of the language in the statute has not never included that, and so whatever the biology department at the U considers the word animal to mean, I don't think that means it in this statute through historical treatment.
At some time.
Mr. Chairman, but first of all, you're changing it, and second of all, you're changing the language by taking out the word domestic. I understand domestic animals. I don't understand the more broad term of animal, how that's covered in this case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I believe that there was concern about the fact that we're not trying to, we want to stop animal fighting, and if you take two cocks that are not domesticated, it's still animal fighting, or bulls, or whatever. Even if they're not domesticated, we don't want people fighting them.
Chairman, how do you define a domesticated cock from a not domesticated cock?
Assemblery.
Is this your first time in front of the finance
committee? Mr. Chairman, is there a way to avoid your committee?
After the previous orientation, I asked the member if he wanted to come back. I don't remember what his answer was.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, that's exactly why it should be deleted, the word domestic, because how do you distinguish between that? It would make it more difficult to prosecute to leave it in there.
But Tim Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, you didn't really successfully answer the question about the Boxing Commission, but let me ask you one. This also includes this.
Representative Kahn, wait till you get back to our corner.
Do we have a neighbor dispute here? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn. Representative Kahn, I think that would be left up to prosecutors. I don't know whether
I don't think we should be, I don't think we're trying to encourage biting fish either.
Reptile time.
Sarah, have you ever heard of biting fish?
Mr.
In the breed name. I don't know if anything else that has that in the breed.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, I have heard of them, but just because they're called Siamese fighting fish and they like to fight, many other animals out in nature fight, but we don't encourage that for sport and to take advantage of those animals and to bet on them and things like that.
You think that if you're closing off these other avenues, that that might become a new avenue?
That's the Maury.
Mr. Chairman, I was brought down from a committee that my bill was waiting for 2 minutes to be up, and they are sitting there waiting. I think I spent at least a half hour.
Yeah, we do have another bill, members, and the majority leader just reminded me that he would like to hold a Rules Committee meeting as soon as we're done, so this is about time.
Well, I just want to check along that line is that a device could be an aquarium tank.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Khan, I don't think that that's considered a device to enhance the ability to fight.
Mr. Chairman, if you put two Siamese fighting fish in the same aquarium, they're going to fight.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, this has not been a problem with the history of this statute. I'm trying to correct things that have been a problem with prosecuting people training animals to fight and putting them in fighting situations. I think we could parse every statute and go to the absurdities on most criminal statutes of there has to be a reasonableness in the prosecution. That's in every criminal statute.
Yeah. Some time.
Just one last comment. You haven't brought the existing law to cleaner. You've made changes in it. You've added things besides cockfighting and dogfighting. You've changed it from just domestic animals. And so, you know, I think you ought to be able to answer this perfectly reasonable question.
Representative Seifert, do you have an aquarium?
I don't, Mr. Chair, but I was. I know other states have talked about this since the Vic case, and this is a serious question. I know Representative Khan didn't get a real good answer, and you could talk about scorpions and terrariums that fight. It's the same type of deal, and I don't know how you keep them apart and stuff. But I mean, the one thing is why the Ag Committee. I know in other states have talked about this. The Ag Committee has the Ag Committee looked at this bill? So there aren't the unintended consequences. I know we both Ag chairs are on this committee. They don't look anxious to have it in front of their committee.
I mean,
do they think it's worth a look or not really?
You're looking for a response
from either one of them.
Mr. Chair, it's a policy question probably, so it wouldn't necessarily come to my committee unless there was. And Representative Hager can actually point it out that we assume the statute doesn't pertain to a lot of agriculture because now, again, you do have pitting of one animal against another. A lot of sheep farmers use dogs to chase sheep in the field, and they're yipping and biting at their legs, and you know, is that considered fighting? So there are some questions that could technically transfer into the ag realm unless they're specifically excluded. Now, again, Representative Tremba is the chair of a policy committee, and obviously she watches these bills go through and hasn't requested it, but it didn't have a fiscal note at this time, so I didn't really look at it myself.
Mr. Chair, the one reason is it changed quite a bit, as Representative Dunkey said. It's, you know, one animal against another of the same or different kind, and we have cattle dogs and sheep dogs in my district, and you know, you could consider it fighting, I suppose, if, you know, if they're nipping at their legs and stuff. And I don't want to have any unintended consequences where we've got, you know, farmers or ranchers getting arrested for essentially what's been going on in my district for 150 years. I would assume the prosecutors have common sense not to do that, but I was just hoping the farm groups have a chance to testify at some point on something like this, because it, you know, it could affect something.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure there's no, I've never heard of anybody prosecuting him. If they were, they would lose the next election for sure if a county attorney brought a suit on that. And second of all, I have not, I don't know what goes on farms nowadays, but when I used to be at relatives' farms for a lot of the summer, I didn't hear of them selling admission to watch sheep herding. something new. But,
Mr. Chair, I just I have, Representative Mallory, I have paid for rodeos down in my area in Granite Falls and in Marshall. Brookings, South Dakota is not in my district, obviously, but I mean, there are rodeos all over the place down my area. And, you know, they do have the dogs that help round up animals and stuff. And so, I mean, you do pay to go in to watch a rodeo. And so I know in the metro area you don't think of things like that, but there are unintended consequences to the law. We'll let Representative Tremba, you know, talk about that. But we pay to get into the rodeos down there. And I know there are animal rights people who do not like rodeos. They don't think it's appropriate the way they you know, have the animals there and so forth. But it's a big deal out west.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, that the dog bill did come in front of my committee, and the author of the bill said, please don't hear it, because it was so contentious. So,
not this bill.
No. Not this bill. It was a different bill. So all of that happened, you know, before. It just didn't happen because the author had a lot of calls, and so I didn't hear it.
Representative Tremba, Mr. Chairman, do you think that this could have unintended consequences due to the new language now on rodeos and things of such nature, whether it be circuses or whether it be the county fair? And, you know, the county fair, everybody pays to get in for the most part, and, you know, in some of our counties, they round up animals and there may be fighting because they're in the same cage. People paid to get in. And I know in the 4-H barn you have that going on. I don't like unintended consequences. We've had that a lot in the legislature. We come running in the next year and repeal it. But I just, it'd be nice if Farm Bureau and some folks could say, hey, we have attorneys. They've looked this over. You need to do this, this, and this.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do a lot of judging around the state. And there have been times when organizations have come to the fair and have they've done some things that would prohibit, quite frankly, some of the poultry exhibits, the swine, whatever. So I know that that has happened in the past.
Yeah, I think we've heard the discussion. We're about ready to take a roll. Well, just a concluding comment, and you indicated you wanted to say something, Representative Mallory, and then we're going to...
Well, Mr. Chairman, if Representative Tremba would have liked to see the bill in committee, I'll work with her before the floor, but I think that this bill was only sent to this committee by mistake. It was a thought that was spicy, and this committee is... I mean, I realize germaneness, but there's also a jurisdiction issue, and maybe my committee should call in your finance bill before you... pass it out or something like that. This had unanimous consent in the committee and the policy, and it's only a policy bill. So I would hope that...
Representative Mallory, let me remind you that
so we don't
this
get a
was
shot.
Referred from your committee, and you're the chair of that committee. you made the decision to send it here. I will not be making a decision to send any of the finance bills to your committee.
Mr. Chairman, I did not make the decision. A certain person along there, Roe, asked for it. because he thought there might be a consequence.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to remind you which committee it came out of, however. Okay, with that, we remove, or I remove, Representative Tamar renews his motion that House File 3132 of the first growth must be recommended to pass and placed on the general register as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. You think? Okay, we are now reverting back to Representative Walker's bill, and we'll have an amendment on that. Let's see, this is House File 2119. So Representative Walker renews her motion to put it back before us that House File 2119, Second Committee in Growth, or 219, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Representative Walker, we did have an earlier discussion on the bill, and you now have an amendment that
yes,
I assume
Mr.
takes
Chair.
Care of the issues that were raised. Representative Walker.
Mr. Chair and members, it takes care of the issue that was raised. I am going to do a follow-up with Mr. Shepard because he does want to look at it again to make sure that the language is completely correct. But that putting the and on the line 210 instead of or takes care of the initial concern.
And Representative Walker then moves the amendment. We're so accustomed to having numbers on these, but it's the handwritten amendment. I'll just refer to it as the Walker Amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the motion to recommend House File 2119, or 219, what do I say? 21, I guess. 219. House File 219, the second engrossment be recommended to pass as amended. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nope.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Just a reminder, the Majority Leader wanted me to remind everyone that the Rules Committee meeting will be taking place immediately after we adjourn. There are several Rules Committee members on this committee, and that's in room 400. In addition to that, this committee will be meeting at 10 a.m. Monday, and we'll be taking up the health care reform bill by Representative Huntley, so that'll be a very important meeting. And with that, no further business, the meeting adjourned.